Today is June 28th, 1973, and this is Kathleen Mike Dalton, otherwise known as Mike, talking to Mrs. Becky Farrell. Becky is 87 years old, and she was born in 1886 in Wales. Came to the United States when she was 1 year old, I think. She discusses the tape. We are in the Pioneer Homes Orange Lounge. It was suggested that we tape record this interview with Becky because this was a nice, quiet corner of the Pioneer Home in Fairbanks. As you'll note in the tape, the vacuum cleaner starts about 17 minutes through this tape. It gets a little noisy. Mr. Farrell checks up on Becky and comes and finds her in the Orange Lounge where we're talking. And he's quite concerned because he missed her. He's been rather ill and is weak. Was concerned because Becky was gone. Bringing Mr. Farrell into the Orange Lounge where Mike and Becky were talking is Stella Muckenthaler. And Stella is the director of the Pioneer Home in Fairbanks. She's a nurse, lived in Fairbanks for many, many years. We'll talk to Stella on another tape.
Filled with people, you know. Going in every spring. We didn't have airplanes then.
Yes, this was 1926.
That was in 1927. And the boat was always just crowded with people. So the stewardess, of course, I was just a bride. But the stewardess came to me and she said she heard that I was a nurse. And I said, yes, I had been a nurse. And she said she had a family down below that was very sick. And they got on board in Seattle and they were very sick in Seattle. And she said I really had no business letting them aboard. And they were a native family. And but she said she didn't know what was wrong with them. So we had gone clear across the Pacific Ocean then.
You went first to, did you go to Dutch Harbor?
And no, we went through False Pass.
False Pass?
There was a place called False Pass that we used to go through there on the Aleutian Islands.
So you came from Seattle across the Gulf of Alaska to False Pass.
The Gulf of Alaska?
Yeah.
From
Seattle?
No, we went out into the Pacific Ocean.
I see.
And then we came up north and through False Pass. And then we hit the Bering Sea. After on the other side of False Pass was the Bering Sea, and was almost full of solid ice. And we'd have to travel very slow through this ice. So anyway, she said she heard that I was a nurse and asked me if I'd go down and see this family. There's something wrong with them. Well, the minute she opened the door, I knew what was wrong, because I could smell it. And I said, oh, your family's got smallpox. Oh, my, no, she said. It can't be smallpox. And I said, yes, it is. And she said, well, so I examined them, and they, sure enough, they had smallpox. And, oh my, she said, I'll get dismissed for this, she says, for allowing them on board. And I said, well, I said, I can't help that. I said, you'll have to take care of that part of it yourself. But I said, I'd have them isolated right away. I said, of course, it's too late to isolate them now. Everybody's been exposed to them. And so, anyway, she isolated them, and And then we got into the ice, and we had to travel real slow in the ice. And I don't know what... she didn't tell the captain right away. But later she told the captain about it, and he was just furious. He wanted to know who permitted it and all this thing. So anyway, she said that I said that it was smallpox. And he says, well, you know what this means, don't you? He's got this boat full of people, and they all want to go ashore when they get to Nome. And he said, well, we'll travel slow. So we traveled slow and sent word ahead to Nome. And Mrs. Reed, the present Mrs. Reed's father-in-law, was a commissioner there in Nome. So he sent word to Washington, D.C., and they said no, nobody could go ashore as long as the doctor didn't have any vaccinating points, why they couldn't go ashore until they got vaccination points. So we got out into the roadstead in nice clear water, a beautiful spring day, an ideal day to go ashore. And anyway, we couldn't go ashore, and so they were sent to Washington, D.C., and Washington, D.C. wired San Francisco, and there was a hospital ship in the harbor in San Francisco, so they ordered them to come up, and so they did, and they came full speed ahead. And they got up there in 5 days.
Imagine. 5 days?
In 5 days, by boat. Of course, we didn't have any airplanes in Nome then, you know.
Right.
And so anyway, they came alongside, and the captain ordered everybody on deck. So we all went out on deck, and then he ordered us down to the dining salon. And he said, everybody bear your arms, we're going to be vaccinated. So they vaccinated the entire ship. Some of them balked, and they just didn't want it done. So anyway, we were vaccinated, and it was a very trying 5 days waiting for that ship to get there. Because everybody remained pretty well in their cabins, and say the least, I was very unpopular.
Did other people aboard the ship get smallpox?
No, nobody got it.
Nobody else.
They were exposed, but they didn't get it.
That's a miraculous thing, isn't it?
So then when we went. When we were in the roadstead, they put the family over the side, and they sent them down to an old place called Fort Davis. And they opened old Fort Davis up and put them in there and sent a man down there to take care of them. Of course, then they were getting pretty well over it.
Yes.
By that time.
How many were in the family?
Well, there was a man and wife and three children.
And each one of them had smallpox.
And they all had smallpox, every one of them.
You were unpopular on the ship for a while, but
I'm sure that people
in Nome were very grateful to you for...
They said, do you realize what you're doing? And I said, well, no, I didn't realize at the time what I was doing, but I knew it was my duty to order them isolated. And
but the Victoria had to be quarantined then just for 5 days?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then after the passengers received smallpox
vaccination, they quarantined the boat.
Uh-huh.
And they sent it back. They sent it back to Seattle.
But then after the passengers were vaccinated.
No, everybody had been vaccinated, and they were left to go to their destination, wherever it was. Most of the men went out on the creeks. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there were families on board, but everybody was vaccinated.
You said that you were coming to Nome as a bride.
Mm-hmm.
You on this trip on the Victoria, was that your first trip to Nome?
My first trip, yes, but not my husband's. Mm-hmm. And that was my first trip. I had worked in a hospital outside before that.
And where did you take your nurse's training?
In Butte, Montana. I was one of the first registered nurses. I was number 38.
In the state of Montana?
In the state of Montana.
Number 38.
And now it's up in the thousands.
What was your husband's name?
His name was Cal Sukstorf, Sukstorf.
And he was a mining engineer?
And he was a mining engineer. Uh-huh.
Tell me about were you born in Montana, Mrs. Farrell?
No. I was born in Wales.
You're born in Wales.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Will you tell me the year, your birthday?
That I was born?
Yes.
1886.
1886. And you came to the United States when?
Well, I was a year old then.
Oh, I see.
When we came over here.
And did you go? Did your parents take you to Montana?
Yes, we went. My father had come up before we did, and he was working there in Montana. He was just a laborer.
Tell me how you met your first husband, Mr. Sukstorf.
I met him in the hospital.
Oh, in Montana?
In Montana, mm-hmm. He had swallowed a toothpick, and they operated on him to remove the toothpick, and I was one of the floor nurses.
So you were married then in 1925?
Yes, I was married in 1925.
And this trip that you just described on the Victoria, where you had the smallpox case, that was 1927. When you went to Nome in the Victoria?
Yeah, I think it was in 1927, yes, that the stewardess came to me and asked me to see it, whether or not it was smallpox.
And when you got to Nome, when you got off the ship and got to Nome, did you live in Nome?
No, we stayed at the hotel there. We stayed at the hotel and we went down on the river, that's down the coast a little. Salmon's down the coast from Nome. Mm-hmm. And then we had to go up into the mountains about 17 miles.
And did your husband have a mining operation there?
Yes, he had a... That first summer that we were there, we built the dredge. And we had a little small gold dredge. And the first summer we built the dredge. And then from then on we operated the dredge in the summertime.
Mm-hmm. And did you stay there in the wintertime? Or did
no.
you... Go back to
no,
the...
No, we went outside.
Went outside.
We lived outside in the summertime, in the wintertime.
And how many years did you mine?
Well, not very long. We were up at the head of the river, and it was a very productive river. And I think we were the fifth dredge on the river, and every one of them were successful. I did very well.
Then did you and your first husband live in another, in some other section
well, then
of Alaska?
The big flu epidemic took place in 1918, and I was very active in that. And of course, that was before I was married.
But when did you first come to Alaska?
When did we first come? That was my first trip to Alaska. It was in 19. We were married in 1925.
But then you say you were active in the flu epidemic in Nome.
The flu epidemic was outside in Montana.
In Montana. Mm-hmm. I see. I understand.
And that was in
1918. 1918. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What year, do you remember what year you graduated from nursing training?
Yes, 1912.
1912.
Mm-hmm.
And was that was in Montana?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had two sisters.
Did any of your family come to Alaska?
No. My family, my entire family is gone now. They're all dead.
Then after you and your first husband mined on Salmon River, where did you go after that?
Well, then after that we were going to go up to the Kook Rock, and then the Big Depression came. And that was in 1929, if you recall.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became very ill, and we never did go back up there. Then he died in 1944.
Outside. You were living outside?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And when you were on the Salmon River or in Nome, did you do any nursing?
Oh, yes. I took care of different things that came up in camp, you know. Some of our men got injured, and I'd always take care of them.
Did you have to set any broken bones?
No, I can't recall that I took care of any broken bones, but we used to go ahead of the dredge and burn all
the brush?
The brush ahead, you know. So this day, my husband stepped on a twig. It was burning. It was in the fire and was burning. And the twig came up and hit him in the eye. And so I had quite a time with that eye. And so anyway, I kept telling him all the time that we should go to Nome to the doctor. No, you wouldn't go. Well, finally he got so painful that he gave in and went to Nome. So I didn't have anything to do with for the eye, so I used castor oil in it. I put castor oil in it. So took him to town, and we,
That's, that noise you hear is the vacuum cleaner. I think they're cleaning your room. Mm.
And so anyway, took him to town. Dr. Walsh says, well, I don't know what you're bringing him to town for. He says, I'm going to send you right back and tell you to keep on using castor oil in it. So, we went back, and it cured up all right, but it was a nasty burn on his eye. But,
were there other women living on Salmon River when you lived there?
This is Salmon River.
Salmon River.
Not Salmon River.
Salmon River.
Salmon River. No.
No other women?
No, there were no other women, but there had been, there were five old wretches along the route. We went up the river about 17 miles.
Then your first husband died in 1944. Were you living in Montana then?
Or? Yes. Mm-hmm.
Montana.
We were home. We were in Missoula, Montana.
And was he from Montana?
No.
Was he? Where was he born?
Well, he was born in White Salmon, Idaho. Or not Idaho, Washington. And he went to school at Ames University. Graduated from Ames.
From Ames University.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have children?
No, we didn't have any children.
No children.
I wasn't blessed with children. Always wanted children.
Well, tell me how you came back to Alaska.
Well, then of course, that's kind of a long story, because after 29, when the Big Depression was on, and I went back nursing. So I went right back nursing right there in Montana. And I did special nursing then.
So you continued to nurse then until...
Well, and then my husband got desperately ill. He had emphysema, and he had a large tumor in the chest. Mm. And we had surgery done on his chest. He lived about 4 days. So then I went back to work.
This was in Missoula, Montana, still.
In Missoula, Montana.
And then, when did you return to Alaska?
Well, in 1944. Mr. Farrell had ground that my husband was interested in, mm-hmm. and he was going to go ahead and, if he could have gotten well, and gone ahead and developed that ground, but he didn't get well.
And when did you marry Mr. Ed Farrell?
I think it was 1946.
Mm-hmm. So you had known Mr. Farrell?
Alaska? We corresponded because I was still interested in the ground that my husband, in the ground that Mr. Farrell had,
mm-hmm.
and we corresponded, and then he asked me to come up to see the ground and to talk to him, and so I did, and I met him that way.
I see. And were you married then in Alaska?
I was married in 1946. Yes, it was 1946.
Was that here in Alaska, or was it in Montana?
No, I was married in Fairbanks.
And where was Mr. Farrell, where was his property, or where was he operating?
Well, he had claims down on a creek called Golden Creek. It turned out to be a good little creek, very productive. And
where is Golden Creek?
Well, I don't know how to tell you where it is. It's
he's pretty good.
It's out of Tanana. It's down the river. It's about 30 miles down the river. That's Tanana.
Mm-hmm. And how long were you...
Then we didn't go down there. We didn't... I didn't go ahead with it at all. When I went back home and went back to nursing. And I kept corresponding with him, and he said, why don't you come up here, and why don't we get married? And so my sister talked me into it, more or less. She said, you're getting older, and I think you should get married. You'll find a good man. Now here he comes. I wonder why they brought him down here. Isn't that him?
Yes.
Huh?
That's him.
Who's with him?
That's Stella. Stella Munkenthaler.
Didn't know she brought him this far.
I didn't do too well. Becky, you're not supposed to see that.
What'd she say?
She said that she didn't do too well. He did.
Is this being recorded?
Mm-hmm. We can turn it off.
Okay.
Well, I guess we're about through anyway.
I just wondered if...
He understands that you're to have quiet so that...
You're on record.
Yes, I know. He understands, though, that you're to have quiet and he shouldn't bother you. But he's just wondering where you were.
And you had to bring him down here. Busybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sit tight now.
Bye.
He can watch the squirrels and the He can watch the squirrels and the birds. They're fun to watch.
His eyesight's very bad. I must remember that's on.
Mm-hmm.
I was the first woman to fly to Fairbanks with Noel Ween.
From Nome?
From Fairbanks to Nome.
You were the first woman...
To fly to
Nome with Noel Ween.
Mm-hmm.
The first woman to fly to Nome, period.
Yes. The women had had flown out of Nome, but they had never flown into Nome.
I see. And what kind of plane did you fly in? Did it have an open cockpit?
Well, it was it didn't have instruments or anything.
At this point in our recording, Ed Farrell, accompanied by Stella Munkenthaler, came into the lounge where Becky Farrell and Mike Dalton were talking. Ed was concerned because he woke up from his after-lunch nap and found Becky missing and demanded to find out where she was. So now Ed joins us, though he doesn't speak. He tells me she's the first woman to fly to Nome. You flew from Fairbanks?
Yeah, I had made a trip outside and came back and flew with Noel Ween back to Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm.
And we had quite a trip, too. We were down at Iditarod and we picked up the superintendent of schools. His name was Mr. Henderson. And then we flew from Iditarod to Unalakleet, and we got delayed in a rainstorm. So we went down, and I thought I'd never forget the man that took care of the trading post there.
At Unalakleet?
At Unalakleet.
Charlie Degnan?
Charlie Traeger.
Traeger?
Traeger, I think it was. So it came to rain, and we had to stay there. And he had a big room upstairs that that was his living quarters, and then he had the trading post downstairs. So he put me to sleep on the floor, back of the counter, downstairs, and the men slept upstairs. So we spent the night there. And the next morning we went to, it stopped raining, and we went to, on to Nome.
Were you going outside?
No, we were coming, I was coming back from outside.
Oh.
I had been outside, and I came back by way of Fairbanks to Nome.
Oh, I see. You came to Fairbanks, and then you...
Come to Fairbanks, and then from Fairbanks to Nome. By plane with no wing. Mm-hmm. Then we got to know each other very, very well, Noel and I. I took care of his father-in-law. He had pneumonia and was desperately ill. And the doctor in Nome asked me to take care of him.
That was in
1927 or 28. I'm not sure of that.
So that was that Ada Ween's father?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you've known, is Ada Ween from Nome? Is she a Nome girl?
Oh yes, she was a Nome girl.
Did you travel out of Nome by ship again, or did you just make one trip to Nome on board a ship?
No, we made several trips back and forth from Seattle to Nome by the old Victoria.
This is tape number 2 of 2 reels, talking to Becky Farrell. June 28, 1973, interviewed by Mike Dalton at the Fairbanks Pioneers Home. Or Seattle, back to Nome. How long did it take? 10 days or 2 weeks?
Well, it was dependent on...
This is tape 2 of 2 reels.
Some days would be all of a week anyway on that trip.
And what would you do on the boat for entertainment?
Well, we just did a lot of things. We'd have spelling contests, and we'd have what we call capital contests, to see how many people knew the capital of certain states, and we'd have...
Did you have dances?
Oh, yes, definitely dancing.
Card games?
An awful lot of dancing and card games. And everybody knew each other, you know. Everybody was acquainted with each other.
You mentioned to me one time that you had a mock wedding.
Oh, that was Ada Ween.
Oh, Ada?
Yeah, tell me she about was that. Coming back. She was coming back on that first boat from finishing school down in California, and we had a wedding, and they had an old lace curtain, and they made a bridal veil out of it, and then her father got word that she had married this man, and of course the man was a commissioner, and he said, well, you just stay on board, don't come ashore.
But it was a mock wedding.
And it was a mock wedding.
Yeah.
Then I remember Ada and Noah when they got married.
Did you go to their wedding?
Yes. And then 20 years later, when I came back and got married to Mr. Farrell, Ada asked me over to tea one afternoon, and she brought this box out, and she said, for you only would I open this box. And it was wedding cake. It was some of Ada's wedding cake.
Is that right?
And that was 20 years later.
Yeah. For heaven's sakes. Who are some, did you know any of the other weens in Nome?
None of the brothers had ever come up there, except Ralph. Ralph came up, and he was killed up in Kotzebue. Mm-hmm. He went up in a plane, and he had the Catholic priest with him. And the plane dove down into the earth and killed him.
Both.
And that was Ralph Ween. That was the only Ween that came up other than Noel. And then the other brothers came later.
Then back to 1946 or 47, after you married Mr. Farrell, did you live at Golden Creek?
At Nome?
No, Golden Creek.
No, I didn't live at Golden. He leased the ground out to some other people, and they worked that ground.
Tell me some of the places that you and Mr. Farrell have lived.
Well, of course, I didn't do much prospecting. Really, most of his prospecting was done before we were married. But he was up on the fish wheel stampede, and he never missed a stampede. He was in on every stampede. That was before we were married. And then the fish wheel stampede. And, well, there are different I can't think now.
Did you live in Livengood?
Did I live in Livengood? No, I just cooked one summer for them in Livengood.
It
was on Ben Falls' ground.
Did you live in Fairbanks most of the time?
Yes, most of the time we lived in Fairbanks.
And in the summertime, you...
And Mr. Farrell worked out at Ladd Field.
I see.
He was a plumber out at Ladd Field for a good many years.
I remember, I think it was 1970, I saw Mr. Farrell in Manly Hot Springs.
In the hospital?
Manly Hot Springs.
Yes, that's right.
And he was down there doing assessment work.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh.
Does he still have property?
Well, he has property, but he hasn't developed it or anything, you know. Of course, I don't think we ever will go out again now. He's pretty old. He's past 90 years old.
He's past 90.
Hmm?
Mr. Farrell is past 90.
Yes.
And you're, according to my calculations, you're 87.
87, uh-huh.
And when you lived in Fairbanks, did you do any nursing in Fairbanks?
No. I went out and gave a couple of hypos, and that was all for Dr. Scheibel and some sick patients that he had. Mm-hmm. I used to go over there at midnight and give this woman hypos.
So, since you've lived in Fairbanks, you haven't actively nursed?
No, the sisters called me a couple of times, but I never did go back nursing.
Well, back to Nome and your early days in Nome, was there a hospital there?
Oh, yes.
And what was the name of the hospital?
That was the Maynard Hospital.
Is that a operated by a church?
It was what?
Was it operated by a church, a religious denomination?
I can't remember that the sisters had anything to do with that hospital. I can't remember that. I just can't remember that. Who operated that?
You didn't work in the Nome Hospital.
No.
Do you recall the name of the doctors you knew in Nome?
Well, it was Dr. Walsh was the one that didn't have the vaccination points. And then I can't remember that there was a young doctor came and took Dr. Walsh's place. And I remember he was quite a piano player. And he was one that was taking care of Mr. Arthur's when Mr. Arthur's had pneumonia. And then he came and asked me to go and take care of Mr. Arthur's.
Now, Mr. Arthur's is
Ada Wayne's father. Mm-hmm.
So her name was Ada Arthur's.
Ada Arthur's. Mm-hmm.
And did he recover from pneumonia?
Oh, yes.
You must have been a good nurse.
Well, he did go through we never had penicillin in those days, and he did go through a crisis. And I gave him his heart was weak, and I gave him a 30th of strychnine. We used to give strychnine then, in the early days for a crisis like that. And so I pulled him out of it. They were always very grateful to me. Ada's a very good friend.
Well, I guess I'm mostly on down to the room there, Becky.
Well, all right. Uh-huh. I won't be long.
Can you make it by yourself, Mr. Farrell?
I'll have to, I guess.
Well, why don't I call somebody to walk with you?
Yes,
we should call someone to walk with him.
Now you've turned it on, haven't you?
No, I turned it back on. Mr. Farrell's going back to his room. Can you tell me some of the doctors' names, some of the doctors you've known in Fairbanks?
The doctors in Nome?
No, in Fairbanks.
The doctors' names?
Yeah. Like Dr. Scheibel. Now, you know Dr. Scheibel.
Well, Dr. Scheibel and Dr. Our bone man.
Hagelin.
Dr. Hagelin and his wife.
Marge.
Yeah, a very charming wife.
Have you known Marge for a long time?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think she's charming.
Yeah. She's a prolific woman. Does many nice things for people. She's active in a lot of organizations that help people.
Well,
did you know Dr. Sutherland?
No, Dr. Sutherland was before my time. I'll tell you a very interesting little thing that happened to me. It was in 1935. I had the honor of meeting Will Rogers.
Well, you did.
I met him down in the old Pioneer Hotel.
In 1935?
In 1935. That was the year that he was killed.
Mm-hmm. And were you visiting Alaska then?
And, well, my husband, my former husband, mm-hmm. was up here looking at ground. And I stayed at the Pioneer Hotel. And Mary Tibbetts and her husband are the ones that ran the Pioneer Hotel. And she didn't, they wired ahead for a room, and she didn't have a room. So she asked me if I would mind moving out of my room into a smaller room, because my husband had gone out to see a crick, and he left me there at the Pioneer Hotel. And she said Will Rogers was coming, and she had to have a room for him. So I said yes, so she moved me. And when she said that he was coming in very shortly, so he came in, and he came on a bus from the field, and she introduced him to me. And she told him that I had given up my room for him. And he's a, well, he's a charmed, I'm sure. And he had a very southern drawl. And then he never came back from that trip.
That was the trip that he was killed on.
1935.
Mm-hmm. I have visited the spot near Point Barrow where he was killed.
Hmm?
He was killed.
Yes.
Near Point Barrow.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I visited that spot.
Oh, is that so?
There's a monument that's been erected at the spot where he and Wiley Post were killed. Mm-hmm. And it's about, I think it's about 14 miles down the coast from Barrow Village.
And I don't know, I think it was in 1927 that Charles Lindbergh and his wife were forced down as safety.
And where was that?
And that was in Nome.
In Nome.
And I remember meeting him and his wife. And then another dignitary was Amundsen. I met Amundsen.
In Nome, also?
In Nome.
Tell me about your meeting Amundsen.
Well, Amundsen made that flight over to the North Pole.
He came from Europe to
Alaska. He came
Alaska.
From Europe. And then he landed at Teller.
Now, he was flying in a big, what are they called? What did they call them then? Blimps?
Not a blimp. I forgot what they call that. Oh, it was a big plane. And they had this little dog. They had a little terrier dog with them. And this Italian, he was a colonel or something in the Italian army. And then he made a trip after that, this colonel did. And that was the time that they ate one of the men. They didn't have any food. And they ate one of the men. And then Mussolini discharged him and took all of his honor away from him. And he was an Italian. And he had this little terrier dog that they took along with him on this trip across the North Pole.
Now, they were flying in, is the name dirigible? Dirigible?
I think it was a gigantic thing.
Gigantic, big,
yeah. Uh-huh.
Air-filled uh-huh. or gas-filled.
And a very good friend of mine who had a trading post at Teller. Oh dear, I've forgotten her last name. Mrs. Peterson. And she took pictures of his plane when it came down there in Teller. She took pictures of it, and she was telling me all about it.
What was Mrs. Peterson's first name?
I don't know. Her husband's name, I think, was Tom. And they had a trading post to Teller.
Were they there for a long, long time? For many years?
Yes, they were for many years. She was a very charming person. She was a very nice person.
And when you met Amundsen, did...
That was in Fairbanks. Oh, no, in Nome.
But did the city of Nome have a party or a reception?
Oh, yes, they had a big turnout for him. And he was a huge man, great big man.
He visited Nome several times, I think.
stewardess.
Yes, he did. Then when the Lindberghs landed down in the down at safety, why, oh my goodness, all the so-called dignitaries from Nome went down the coast, and they had a turkey dinner for him, and then they had him speak, and they had a big reception for he and his wife, and they were very informal, and they seemed to think that they should dress up for this reception. They said no, that they didn't have any formal clothes, and they didn't intend to dress up. They didn't. It was in the Pioneer Hall, and the stage was kind of elevated off the floor, and the hall was just packed with everybody in Nome was there, and this Eskimo woman came in with a baby on her back, and the baby started to cry. So she took the baby out of the parka and sat on the edge of this platform and proceeded to nurse the baby. And oh my, they thought that was terrible. And they were going to put her out and take her. Oh no, Ann Lindbergh says, she's only doing her duty. She said she's a mother, and she wouldn't let them put her out. It was just a little incident.
So the Eskimo lady fed her baby
fed the baby.
In front of the whole town of Nome. When you said they landed at safety, where is safety?
Well, safety is about 15, 20 miles down the coast from Nome. It's just nothing there but a trading post.
Well, when they landed, were
they landed
forced
in
down?
The water, yes, they were forced down, and they were landed. They landed in the water, and Charlie Dahlquist, he was married to a squaw, and he was a squaw man, but he was a great big powerful Swede, and he helped them carry water. Water got in the plane, and he helped them carry water. And Ann Lindbergh was dressed in just plain overalls, and she had carried water. And they wanted to give her a formal and all this, and she had no part of it. She said, "Oh no," she says, "we're on our way to Japan." And
so they didn't want to get all gussied up for Nome.
No.
Well, tell me about Will Rogers' visit here. You told me that he stayed at the Pioneer Hotel, that you gave up your room so he could use the room.
Yes.
Did you go down to the riverbank when they left Fairbanks?
No.
I have seen pictures of Will Rogers and Wiley Post down on the Chena Banks in Fairbanks before they left.
No, I didn't go down. I didn't know that they traveled by river. I thought they traveled by plane.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't here in 1935, so I don't know. I just assumed that they might be on floats.
No, I'm pretty sure that Wiley Post flew.
And they probably landed at Weeks Field then. The old airport at Weeks Field.
I don't remember that.
Did you, in Fairbanks, did you belong to the Alaska Nurses Association?
No, I never joined the Pioneer or the Alaska Nurses Association, and I never went back nursing. I promised my sister that I wouldn't do it because I had worked hard. And she said, I want you to give it up altogether. And the sisters did call me. And Dr. Seibel called me to go over to Mrs. Owsley and give her hypos about midnight every night. And I did that, but then this young doctor, I forgot what his name was, he was quite a piano player. No, that was over in Nome. And he asked me to go and take care of Billy Arthur's.
But you joined the Pioneers of Alaska, though. You belong to the Pioneers.
Yes, I belong to Pioneers.
Do you think you and Mr. Farrell will be able to come to the mug-up dinner?
Well, we always did. We never missed one of them. But I don't know whether we could make it again now. But we always did. He was the King Regent with Eva.
Oh, he was.
And he was the King Regent, she was the Queen. In 1960, I think it was 1962.
Do you know who the King Regent is this year? It's Jack Link.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah.
Well, that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes, I was very fond of Jack Link. Yeah. I think he was a very charming person.
I think everyone here at the Pioneer Home was very fond of Jack.
Yeah, very fond of Jack Link. You could go to him with your troubles and he's sitting patiently hear you out, you know. Mm-hmm.
I don't know who the Queen Regent is yet. Monday night is, is that the 2nd of July? Is that Monday? No. We have a meeting Monday night, the Pioneers, mm-hmm. and I think the Queen Regent will be announced then.
You remember Mrs. Wilbur?
Yes.
I felt so badly about her.
Yes. Very, very sad.
Yes, I should say she was the sweetest thing. She used to come to see me and we'd chat about early days. And
some of the other guests in the Pioneer Home here, have you known them for a long time?
Well, of course, I met Mrs. Rust. And then, of course, Ed knew the Coils over in Ruby when he was a young man.
Mm-hmm.
He used to play ball. He used to be a baseball player.
Ed was a baseball player.
And in the early days. And who else was it now that we knew in the Pioneers? And of course, Mae Gibson and all the old, there was a bunch of the old timers that were charter members.
Yes.
And so Ed said, I wasn't going to join the Pioneers. And he said, well, you better join them and you better join them fast. Because he said, there's only a certain group that's going to be Pioneers. And he said, I think it would be quite an honor if you became a charter member.
Mm-hmm.
So I did.
You're a charter member.
So I'm a charter member of Pioneers.
Good. You said that Ed went to most of the stampedes.
Hmm?
Your husband, Ed Farrell, took in most of the stampedes?
Oh, yes, he never missed one.
When did he first come to Alaska?
I think he was 15 years old when he first came up here.
And how old He's what, 90 now? 91?
In 91.
So
he was one of the drivers of the diphtheria episode that took place, one of the early drivers on this end between, I think he drove between Ruby and Galena or someplace, you know, they relayed.
Yes, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Four years ago, when I was in Tanana, I took a picture of one of the Indian men there. His name was Sam Joseph, and he was 98 at that time, and he was blind, and he died 2 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the drivers. He's helped carry the syrup.
He was one of the drivers.
Yes. And he mm-hmm. carried mail on the up and down mm-hmm. the Yukon for many, many, many years. Did Mr. Farrell carry the mail at any time?
No, I can't recall that he carried the mail. Now, I may be mistaken on that.
But he
was one of the early drivers at this end. And I don't know how far he drove the diphtheria vaccine.
Is his memory pretty good for dates and incidents?
Well, I guess it is, but he's kind of modest about it. He's kind of reticent about speaking about early days.
Mm-hmm. That's the problem with most of our pioneers. They're just good people, and they don't like to brag about themselves.
No, they don't like to brag about them.
We're not, today, on this tape, we're not publishing this. This is just for the Historical Society.
Mm-hmm.
So we can record some of the early events mm-hmm. that you people know, that you've witnessed.
I remember Ed recorded something once for the Historical Society. And what's his name? Mr. Hughes came to the house, and he had both of us record something for the Historical Society.
That's Harry Hughes.
Harry Hughes. Yeah. Is he in town, by the way?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I have not seen him this year, mm-hmm. but he comes up every summer. I hope he comes this summer. It's nice to see him.
Yes, he's quite...
Well, one of the nurses here at the Pioneer Home is Gladys Parker. Did you know the Parker family?
I knew the Parker family, but I didn't know her. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, she wasn't married yet into the family, but the Parker family used to mine here. You know, old Grandpa Parker. You know,
mm-hmm.
and.
Gladys's husband is Carl.
Yes, Carl.
Is he still mining? I think he's mining this summer again.
Well, they have that ground out there at Live and Good. And I don't know how large an operation it is. But they've done fairly well out there, I think.
Well, Mrs. Farrell, I appreciate your time and trouble.